Hello, this is Outfield Fly Rule Special Correspondent Wellington Castillo. On Friday night, I had the opportunity to revisit my old friend Dansby Swanson in the charming little Georgia village with the grandiose name Rome. Dansby had recently become afflicted with a contusion of the foot, a dreadful turn of events for the old man, but on Friday he deigned to appear with the young men of Rome to test the soundness of that confounded heel. I am pleased to report that Dansby was scampering about the infield like the young lad I knew so long ago, playing rounders after Mrs. Scouterbottom's letters class. There is little doubt in my mind that he shall have no problem fielding his shortstop position upon his return to the Atlanta Baseball Club. I have to report that I was also quite impressed with the athletic abilities of another youngster, one Master Michael Harris. He reminded me of a young Wellington before I donned the tools of ignorance. This is Wellington Castillo, signing off. And wishing everyone a lovely summer bank holiday.
Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And this is Andy Harris, and with me is world traveler Matt Kritzberg. Matt, how was Mexico?
Mexico was fun. It was hot. That's why most people don't like to go in August, but I was dumb enough to do so. But I am back and ready to talk some baseball.
Well, we have some baseball to talk about, sir. First of all, I want to thank our special correspondent, Wellington Castillo, with that report from Rome. He caught some Dansby Swanson action back on Friday. I was also at that game. Braves lost. Rome was like the only game that Rome has lost in the last 5 or 6 days, I think. Boy, Shea Langeliers, that guy is on a run. I saw he had a four-hit day to day. I'm not surprised. He is swinging the bat with confidence. When I saw him today, it was a much better look than I'd saw the last time I saw him, which was not too long after he signed. So he seems to really be making an adjustment. But a good time in Rome this week for me. And Matt, we got September call-ups right around the corner.
Oh, it's getting to be that time. As of the time we're recording, we're looking at just a week away. So get ready for some folks to move on up.
Well, we're moving on up, moving on up. To the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky.
Yeah, there's actually this week, there wasn't that many. There was actually, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there was two. And one was today, and it was a guy I don't think I was expecting to move up, left-hander Phil Pfeiffer.
Yeah, it's interesting because he'd been starting at Mississippi. I mean, he was on a solid run at Mississippi for the handful of starts he had been there. The way he'd been pitching, I thought they were just going to leave him there for the rest of the season based off of, I mean, he only had maybe about a couple of starts left. But in his brief time in Mississippi as a starter, he has a 1.17 ERA, a 0.96 whip in 4 starts, and he was due to start on Sunday, but they called him up to Gwinnett, and he got into a game as a reliever, interestingly enough. And I'm starting to suspect they're looking for left-handed reliever depth, because when they called up Tyler Matzik in a pretty big hurry, he only made 1 appearance in Mississippi, and then they threw him into the mix at Gwinnett, and now they've got Pfeiffer trying to put him in as a reliever at Gwinnett. So I'm wondering if they're trying to develop some left-handed depth in case something happens at the major league level.
Yeah, right now it's Sean Newcomb and Jerry Blevins, and that's pretty much it. I think A.J. Minter may be the only other left-handed reliever on the 40-man roster right now.
Yeah, I believe you're right, and I think the only reason they're trying to develop this depth is if something happens to, say, Blevins or Newcomb and they end up with a, say, a season-ending injury of some sort, that they would have somebody to bring it back up and take their place? Because I don't even know if they'd even trust Minter at this point, that they may be looking at one of these other options to possibly supersede that.
Right, and we got Grant Dayton, too. Now, he was put on the 60-day DL to make room on the 40-man roster for Cervelli, but he started a rehab assignment. Do you know about when he possibly would be eligible to come off the 60-day IL?
I believe sometime the first couple weeks of September. I mean, it's definitely well before the end of the season. I want to say it's probably around September 9th or thereabouts.
Okay. And then also moving on up this week, outfielder Connor Blair, who was a draft pick in 2019 and was in Danville, moved on up to Rome to replace Braulio Vasquez, who mostly been playing third base. But he went on the 7-day injured list, and that forces Brendan Venter to third base, which, as it turns out, wasn't so bad because Brendan Venter was really good for Rome this year, or I should say this week. But Connor Blair, now a Rome Brave. He's joined other 2019 draft picks now, which include Shane Langoliers and Michael Harris and Drew Campbell and Casey Kalich. And of course, Braden Shoemake has already moved on up to Mississippi. So Braves, as usual, not being shy about promotions.
That's a lot of 29 draftees already in full season ball.
Yeah. All right. So we talked a little bit about September, just looking at the possible 40-man roster and then non-40-man roster guys. That there's a big crunch right now. And I don't know anybody that's not on the 40-man roster that I would actually place a bet on as making it to the roster for September. How do you feel about that, Matt?
I think you're right about that, especially among the position players. There's already a roster crunch at the top as it is. And when you have guys like Swanson and Riley coming off the injured list in the near future, several weeks from now, you could be talking the same about Markakis and NC Arte, that there's really nobody in the minors who would be coming up to take those places. Obviously, you can have Camargo, who's already in the 40-man. He'll be back in the near future, but I don't see anybody non 40-man roster-wise who would fit that description. I don't see Pache or Waters coming up this season at all.
Yeah, they've just filled up that potential room there with the veterans like Hamilton and Hechevarria and Cervelli. So, which makes total sense. You're looking to make a long run into the postseason. Those guys have been there and done that before. I feel a little bit more comfortable with them, as much as I love the kids, and I think the kids are going to be great for this season. I think I would rather have Cervelli than, say, Alex Jackson. I think I would rather have Hamilton instead of Pache, and I think I would rather have Hechevarria instead of, well, I don't know who.
And among the veterans they brought in, guys like Lane Adams, who's toiling away in Mississippi right now, I don't see any path for him to get to the roster, because Billy Hamilton basically fills the role that Lane Adams could fill. I mean, he runs fast, he could steal some bases, but Billy Hamilton's a much better fielder than Adams is, and I think it takes like some kind of injury to Hamilton to give Lane Adams any kind of a shot at it. And then by that same token, Lucas Duda, who they signed as a left-handed power hitting threat, he's just not hitting at all at Gwinnett. He's after today's 0-for-5, he's down to hitting 140 in his time there, and there was a reason he was released from Kansas City, and maybe there's just not much left there.
Yeah, I saw Duda twice now with Gwinnett on two different occasions, and his bat looks really slow. He's getting beat by basically AAA fastballs. He's not really going to be an option. So of the guys on the 40-man roster, this is somewhat complicated, I guess, maybe by the fact that Gwinnett is in the playoffs. Now, obviously, the Braves aren't going to hold anybody that they actually need at the major league level down at Gwinnett just because the Stripers are in the playoffs. But, you know, while I would have assumed that guys like Minter and Sabatka and Jeremy Walker would be up on September 1, I'm now not quite so certain. I think they might keep at least a couple of those guys down with Gwinnett just a little bit.
Yeah, I could see them bringing up somebody like Sabatka, because, I mean, they love him. But basically, Chris Martin's kind of taking his spot as tall right-hander, except for the fact that he actually throws strikes. But I imagine Patrick Weigel's going to come in the mix at some point. I do think they'll leave the starters down there for now, guys like Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright. I think that they will be in Atlanta at some point, but I think what's going to end up happening is they'll let them pitch the playoff portion at Gwinnett, and then once the playoffs are done, they'll bring them on up. And hopefully by then, the big club will have be clinched as far as everything they need to worry about as far as playoff positioning, and they'll give them a couple of late-season starts to kind of help out and spread out the rotation rest-wise.
Right, and they also have the option of bringing up some guys from Mississippi to help in the playoffs, too. You know, Thomas Burrows and Jason Creasy and Jordan Harrison and Kurt Hoekstra. All these guys have pitched significant innings with Gwinnett at different points this season already, and quite frankly, a lot of them actually have done pretty well with Gwinnett. So now that I think about it, they could just backfill whoever they bring up to Atlanta with the guys in Mississippi, since Mississippi obviously is not going to be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, because it wasn't necessarily merit is why they were sent down from Gwinnett to Mississippi in the first place. It was just bringing in all these extra arms. Guys, when they got the three guys, when they got Martin, Melanson, and Shane Green at the trade deadline, and they just kind of started a cascade where guys had to be demoted to Gwinnett. Therefore, guys from Gwinnett need to be demoted to Mississippi. You got guys like Rowan and some of the other ones you named also that are, in fact, Jose Rafael DiPaolo was demoted to Mississippi today as well. So, yeah, there's going to be like four or five arms they could easily bring up to Gwinnett and could ably fill bullpen spots on that squad.
And I assume Johan Camargo will be up September 1. They can just pop Riley Unruh back up too. I mean, he was the guy that was displaced when Camargo was sent down, I believe. So, yeah, I think Gwinnett will still be able to put together a pretty formal roster, even if Atlanta decides on September 1 to bring up some key members of the team to Atlanta. It'll be interesting to see how they incorporate the injured players back into the fold in Atlanta. I did, in addition to Dansby Swanson, Austin Riley's been rehabbing in Rome, and I saw that they are moving his rehab to Gwinnett for tomorrow. What I saw, the good news is he doesn't seem to be favoring his knee at all. He seems to be moving around very well. The bad news is that he still is looking pretty lost at the plate right now. Now, some of it obviously may just be rust, but given that he had not been doing particularly well at the major league level before his injury and had essentially almost lost his job to Adam Duvall, I wouldn't be surprised if Riley is actually optioned to Gwinnett when his rehab is done.
Yeah, I mean, before the injury came along, he was right at the precipice of that anyway. I mean, it was to where people were having a discussion, do we option Riley or do we option Camargo? I mean, it turned out they couldn't do either because Riley got hurt and Camargo had to stick around for a while just for lack of other options. But yeah, I think when it happens, they'll just send him on down. And they may just end up leaving him down there the remainder of the Gwinnett run and then bring him back in late since he's already on the 40-man roster. Maybe just give him a pinch hit role in Atlanta. I don't see him playing any kind of starting or platoon type role for the rest of the season.
All right. Well, anything to add before we move on to the affiliates?
No, I believe that takes care of the 40-man roster, at least for the moment. Of course, that can change from day to day. So who knows?
Who knows? Maybe somebody will throw away another perfectly good player and we pick him up and bring him on and he hits 400.
Pick him out of the trash, polish him up, and send him out there. Gwinnett Stripers were they had a pretty good week. I mean, they went 3-4, but they are very close to clinching a playoff spot. After Sunday's game action, they only have a magic number of 2 in order to clinch a playoff spot, at least a wild card, and they have a magic number of 4 in order to clinch their division. So they will be getting in the playoffs one way or another. I mean, if they can't overcome a magic number of 2 in the next 2 weeks, then that would be a collapse of all collapses. So they will be getting in the playoffs one way or another. But guys, that this week, we're of course still keeping an eye on the position players who came up recently, Pache and Waters. Drew Waters had a really good week where he hit 333, had an OPS of 967. But the one thing that was really surprising this week is he took six walks this week, and he had two games where he walked multiple times in a game. People might think, okay, that's not a big deal. But coming into this week, Drew Waters only had one multi-walk game the entire season, and he had two this week. So I don't know if people are just pitching around him or if he's trying to concentrate and try to show a better eye, but that was definitely a positive sign based off the 6% walk rate we've been seeing for most of the season. Now, Pache, he hit 308 this week and had an OPS of 770, but unlike Waters, he didn't draw any kind of walks during the week, and it's kind of strange now that he's even falling further down the batting order. While Waters is batting leadoff every night, Pache, who had been hitting six for a good while, now he's hitting out of the eight spot. So I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind that. I don't know if they're just kind of trying to back off on his usage or something, but it just seems kind of odd to me.
I did see him lace a really nice double into the corner today. It looks like his bat is coming around. Like I said last week, his bat looked really slow, and I was pretty dismayed at my look at him last week. It looks like maybe he's climbed over a wall a little bit and is hopefully will come down the stretch with a strong run and, you know, be really good in the playoffs.
And also, in addition to that, I don't know how many people have noticed, but on Drew Waters, I know he's had a really good batting average since he's gone up to Gwinnett. At Mississippi, his BABIP is off the charts. I mean, I think he ended up with about a 462 BABIP at Mississippi. He's over a 500 BABIP at Gwinnett thus far. But, I mean, of course, a lot of that's a function of how he uses the whole field for hitting, that he's not going to be pulling everything to one side and people have a better chance of fielding it. He uses the whole field from both sides of the plate. And so he's going to have a naturally high BABIP, but definitely not 516 BABIP. Pedro Florimon had a really good week also among the veterans there. He had over 1,100 OPS for the week in four multi-hit games. Johan Camargo, it got the little kick in the butt that he needed to get him going. He had four multi-hit games as well and had an OPS of 1179 for the week and earning the coveted OFR Player of the Week honor. Also, the one guy that, and we talked about him a little while ago, Lucas Duda, just absolutely is not doing anything. He was 2-for-22 on the week with seven strikeouts, although he managed to get a hold of one pitch to get a home run. But that seems to be the only thing he's got going for him at this point, that he can get a hold of one every once in a while and knock it out of the park. But other than that, it doesn't look like he's going to be contributing significantly to any kind of roster, AAA or major league-wise. Now, as far as the starting pitching is concerned, the guys who have been contributing are still keep doing fairly well. Kyle Wright, he had one bad start during the week where he pitched six innings, gave up five runs and 10 hits, but he did strike out 10 during that time. So it was kind of a little bit of good and bad in that respect. Bryce Wilson, he's the guy that really is still dominating. He's had another great outing, six innings, gave up just one run on four hits, didn't walk anybody. And over his last five starts, he's 5-0 with an 0.55 ERA and a whip of 0.85. And he's also giving up an opponent's batting average of just 190. And this is in AAA where they're using the happy fun ball. So you can imagine what that would translate to at the major league level. Tucker Davidson also had a we'll call it a decent start. He gave up just one run over four innings, but he was often in frequent trouble, threw a ton of pitches, and he came out after 85 pitches over those four innings, but he still only gave up the one run. Now, we had several other guys that had just really not great starts this week. Oscar Ynoa, three innings, eight hits, three earned runs. Tuki Toussaint just continues to struggle in what is rapidly becoming a lost season for him. He had a four-inning start where he gave up six hits and five walks and four runs. And Patrick Weigel had what we'll call not a great start, although it was kind of a last-minute bullpen game where he pitched two innings, gave up five hits and two runs as far as his start for the week. But he did rebound later on the week. He had a relief appearance where he threw three shutout innings and struck out five. So he appears to be thriving in that bullpen role, and I imagine we will be seeing him in September in Atlanta at some point.
I saw that Patrick Weigel start on Sunday, and the field temperature was over 100 degrees on the field at game time. It's looked to me that Patrick Weigel actually wanted no part of actually playing in that game. Like his body language was, and I don't blame him. He's a big guy, and his body language was such that I don't think he had a lot of confidence or feel for anything. I'd never really seen him like that before. Usually he's very intense. it looked to me like he just really wanted to get off that field as quickly as possible. And he did after two innings. Corbin Klaus actually came on and pitched a pretty good three innings. I think he had one run, but in the circumstances did a really nice job. Unfortunately, he was put on the injured list later that week.
Yeah. And then the last starter for the week that actually was Ian Anderson. He had a pretty good start. He only gave up one run over his first five innings of work, and then he kind of wore down in the sixth inning, gave up a two-run homer to finish up his start. So the numbers don't look great with, I think, five and a third innings and gave up three runs. But he did pitch very well for those first five innings, and all the runs he gave up were via home run. Now, as far as the bullpen's concerned, A.J. Minter, we talked about him earlier. He's been doing fairly well at Gwinnett. He pitched three innings, gave up two hits, no runs, didn't walk anybody, which is good for him, and struck out a couple of hitters. Chad Sabakos, similar results, pitched three innings on the week, didn't get walk anybody, and struck out five. And then, as we mentioned earlier, Patrick Weigel, three shutout innings, and struck out five in a relief appearance. They were all very solid, and I imagine we'll be seeing some combination of them in Atlanta in the near future. Now, some of the guys who didn't really fare particularly well, Tyler Matzik, they kind of rushed him up after one appearance in Mississippi. He had a couple of appearances for Gwinnett this week and pitched two and a third innings, gave up four hits and four runs. Jeremy Walker, three and two-thirds innings, gave up two runs. Jacob Webb had one appearance where he pitched an inning, gave up two runs, but after that, he was put on the 60-day injured list with his elbow impingement, and looks like he's done for the year. Whether it's a recurrence or aggravation of his injury or something, I don't know exactly what the circumstances were there, but it's probably best just to shut him down and get him ready for next spring. And as far as the Mississippi Braves are concerned, they after Saturday night, they were eliminated from any kind of playoff contention, so there's not a lot going on there right now. The Mississippi team has basically been stripped to the bones as far as the pitching staff's concerned. With the promotion of Pfeiffer up to Gwinnett, the pitching staff now is Nolan Kingham, Jaciel De La Cruz, and he's on a pitch count of between 50 to 60 per start. And so they're, and then it, after that, it's just whoever happens to have a healthy arm that day. Jonathan Arroyo's gotten starts, Connor Johnstone, Claudio Custodio, and Custodio's been doing very well. He had a start last week where he pitched seven shutout innings, gave up just two hits and two walks, and struck out five. So I imagine he'll get another couple of looks here before the end of the season. And then in the bullpen, you got Bradley Roney, who's continuing to impress, and Kirk Hoekstra. He's doing very well, and I imagine he's opening some eyes as far as any potential movement here before the end of this season or early next season. And then as far as offense go, one of the things about the Mississippi Braves right now, once Waters and Pache got promoted, they just absolutely are getting no offense right now. They scored 20 runs in eight games this past week, and they have scored four or fewer runs in what is now 18 straight games, but dating back to August 7th. So they're just generating no offense whatsoever. The few guys that are doing anything at all, Riley Unruh hit 300 last week. Grayson Genista had a 750 OPS. Ryan Castile had a he had seven hits on the week as well. Now, Braden Shoemake, he hit 286 for the week, but he didn't have any extra base hits, although he had a couple of walks and a couple of stolen bases. Also, Trey Harris, he kind of slowed down a little bit this week after his quick start at Mississippi. He went just 5-for-30 for a 167 batting average, but I'm sure he'll pop back up again in the near future. But a couple of guys that really had awful weeks. Connor Lean, after being moved back down from Gwinnett, was 3-for-18 with 12 strikeouts and 18 at-bats. And Lane Adams was 1-for-13 with 6 strikeouts. And Lane Adams is only getting like just a little bit of play here and there. He'll start a couple of games a week and then just come in for a couple of games just to as a late-inning replacement and pinch runner. I think they're just basically just trying to keep him fresh in case of emergency break glass kind of guy for the major league level.
All right, down in Florida, kind of the same situation as Mississippi, where the rotation has been kind of stripped to the bones, but kind of like Mississippi, they've played very well. Freddie Tarnock threw probably his best start of his career back on Thursday. He tossed seven innings, allowed one run, and struck out a season-tying high eight batters. Odalvy Javier, two quality starts, including six shutout innings on Sunday, which the Fire Frogs won 1-0. And then Brooks Wilson, Matt Hartman, even Walter Borkovich, all kind of filling in there. Matt Hartman was the OFR Pitcher of the Week last week. You know, a guy that's not very heralded, but is really doing kind of yeoman's work. The bullpen continues to be strong in Florida. So the pitching, for the most part, has been there. Really, Florida's downfall, and this has been true pretty much all season, is just the offense is not really producing much of anything. This week, really, of the regulars, only Logan Brown has really done much. And it's just really hard to generate offense when you're dependent on basically singles to rally. If the sluggers in the middle of the lineup, Jeffrey Ramos and Drew Lugbauer, if they're not hitting home runs, and you know they have their moments, but when they're not on, it's just really hard to generate anything from that lineup. Even Riley Delgado, who's basically a singles hitting machine, has really kind of fallen off in August and is having a tough go of it recently. But the main story with Florida right now is where they're going to play next year. As of right now, there has not been any kind of announcement, and they're reportedly still looking for places. Kind of an odd situation here. They're not going to be at Osceola County Stadium next year. They were bought out of their lease for that stadium by the county, and who is going to take that land and convert it, I believe, into a soccer complex. So where will they be? This is the only club that is not in the Braves affiliate system that is not owned by the Braves. They're owned by an ownership consortium out of Tennessee. It's the Florida State League, so it'll obviously be somewhere in Florida.
Yeah, that's what I was about to bring up, the part about the ownership part, too, because that kind of complicates things. I wonder if the Braves might actually try to buy out the team and possibly move them around to the Northport complex, or that's the only thing I can really think of if they tried to. But if they don't own the team, why should they go above and beyond to do something like that?
That's right. And that seems to be kind of one of the obvious things that could happen. The question is, do the Braves want to do that or not? And then just moving it to Northport would also have some complications with the Charlotte Stone Crabs, which is a Tampa Bay affiliate. Their stadium is only about 10 miles away from the Braves Northport facility. So there would be some territorial rights that they would have to get worked out if they were to move to Northport. I think it's more likely that they go somewhere else, but where that is at this point, I don't know. They even could possibly go back to Brevard County, which is where they were as the Brevard County Manatees. At this point, it's really just up in the air. I'm pretty sure they don't know. And unfortunately, the Braves are tied to this team for one more year. They had a four-year agreement.
And I could see them possibly doing something like that, signing a very short-term one-year lease, obviously, and just kind of washing their hands of it and trying to figure out another solution, kind of punting the decision until 2021.
Yeah, personally, I would love for them to go back to the Carolina League, which they were for many, many years. It's just more likely that they get games in. The rainout situation in Central Florida, quite frankly, has been absolutely ridiculous. I can see why they've been hesitant to put a lot of their top prospects there when they could literally go weeks and only play, you know, four or five games.
Yeah, and that also kind of plays in the next season when you see guys like Shea Langeliers. Where do you put him? I mean, he's probably going to be ready for either high A or double A at the beginning of next season. And based off of that, they might possibly just decide to go ahead and move him on to Mississippi so he won't have to deal with all the Florida drama.
All right, moving on to Rome. Good news is they went 5-2 in their last seven games, so their playoff hopes are still very much alive. Last time I checked, there were three games out of first place with Asheville and Augusta ahead of them. Right now, they won on Sunday, so they kept pace with Asheville. Augusta lost. So they're now one game back. So still very much in it. It is a long shot, but they are playing really well right now, especially offensively. Now, obviously, they got a shot in the arm with Dansby Swanson this weekend. But even beyond that, I mentioned Brendan Vinter hitting really well. He almost made the OFR Player of the Week over Camargo, but Camargo hit just a little bit better. The usual suspects in Rome doing well, Greg Cullen, Bryce Ball, Justin Dean. But this week, Shea Langeliers really came to the fore, playing very confidently, hitting the ball with authority to all parts of the park. Just very exciting to see. Jeremy Fernandez also hitting pretty well. He got displaced a little bit by Austin Riley, who, again, did not hit particularly well while he was with Rome. But overall, Rome is scoring a bunch of runs. Pitching is still... the runs are needed, I shall say that. Mitch Stallings has come up and given up a couple really good outings. But overall, the starting pitching has been a little shaky of late. Hasn't mattered much because we've been hitting so much, but hopefully that will solidify. They got four innings out of William Woods today, and he gave up only one hit and one run, so that's a shot in the arm. It looks like Ryan Shetter is back in the bullpen. He's now at two relief outings in a row now, so I couldn't begin to tell you what the actual rotation for Rome is right now. It really is up and down, and again, probably it's just whoever has the healthy arm at the time. Victor Vodnik, I saw on Friday night, it looked like he was having his usual dominating outing. He pitched three scoreless innings and came on in the ninth to try to finish the game. Unfortunately, Columbia had other ideas and started hitting him around. There was a couple ground ball with eyes, but there was also some hard hit balls as well. And in the end, Vodnik ended up giving back the lead, and that was one of the few losses that Rome suffered. But boy, Vodnik still looks good. I still like him a lot. And there's some other Rome relievers that are doing well. Jake Higginbotham has been really strong all year, and he seems to have gotten stronger down the stretch. Would not be surprised at all if he skipped Florida and went straight to Mississippi, along with, you know, a couple of other guys. Justin Dean, I fully expect to start in Mississippi next year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think 2020 is going to be the year of Vodnik.
That sounds good. DeHinville was eliminated late last week. Since then, they've kind of played some of the best ball they have all year, ironically, including playing spoiler to a couple of other Appalachian League teams. One of the guys that has been hitting well is Ray Hernandez, who, when given the opportunity, is really starting to get hot. And I think maybe just Bryce Ball moving up and allowing him some breathing room there has allowed him to kind of get going. Willie Carter continues to hit well, hit a home run again this week. And then on the pitching side, you know, the rotation has been a little rough all year, but Alger Hodgson is a guy that has made two really good starts for them in the last couple turns through the rotation. He had been a reliever all year and basically had just gotten killed. So they put him in the rotation mostly as again, just next man up sort of thing. And he's really blossomed there. So we'll see if he can keep that going through the rest of this season, which is, you know, 1 week long. And then left-hander Lisandro Santos has done a really nice job for them. He came up actually from the Dominican Summer League, and he's doing really well. The other news out of Danville, Bryce Ball and Mitch Stallings were both named to the Appalachian League All-Star team. And they got additional honors. They were named the Player and Pitcher of the Year for the Appalachian League. So congratulations, Bryce Ball and Mitch Stallings. In the GCL, they're not playing particularly well. They went 1-7 over the last week. They're just playing an ungodly number of games. Again, they're in Florida, so lots of rainouts. They had two doubleheaders last week. They would have had three, but one of the games in that doubleheader was rained out. So they have five more days left in their schedule and seven games scheduled in those 5 days. So those guys are going to be running ragged through the end of the year. Darling Florentino, who is someone we've talked about quite a bit, he started the year in Rome, looked overmatched, has gone back to the GCL. He hit 2 home runs. That gives him 8 for the season. He's a big, strong guy, still only 18 years old. Really hope he develops a solid hit tool because he has got raw power to spare. Really the best offensive player this year in the GCL has been shortstop Vaughn Grissom. And that's not counting, of course, outfielder Michael Harris, who's already moved up to Rome. But Grissom seems to have gotten better and better as the years progressed. And this week hit 292. He's someone that I'm hoping will get a look for Rome next year. On the pitching side, Jared Johnson, one of the star prep pitchers, 3 hitless innings. And after a slow start due to the unfortunate death of his mother right as he was drafted, he obviously that shook him up and he was not able to come to camp right away. He's looked really good and hopefully good enough to warrant a Rome assignment for 2020. And then we don't talk about the DSL Braves that much because they're just so far away. But it should be noted that they concluded their schedule and finished with a winning record. They were 36-34. That is the first DSL Brave squad to finish with a winning record since 2015. And that was the year that William Contreras and Jaciel De La Cruz was on the team. So congratulations, DSL Braves, on a solid season. And we'll see how many of those guys move up to the stateside rookie leagues for next year. Well, Matt, any final thoughts before we conclude this this episode?
You're seeing varying degrees of levels of what they're accomplishing at the moment in the various farm teams, because obviously you have a Gwinnett playoff run going on here. Rome is still have an outside chance of getting in, and the rest are just kind of either wrapping things up or playing out the string. But there are still some interesting things going on, and hopefully we'll see some performances over the last couple of weeks and kind of affect how guys get affected in their placement for the 2020 season.
And if you haven't checked out the Sunday Farm Report on outfieldflyrule.com, a lot of this information is there. But also, I did a prospect spotlight on catcher William Contreras. A lot of info there, including some video from some recent games. So make sure you check that out. Matt, good to have you back in the States.
It's good to be back and talking some baseball.
All right, and we will catch you all next week.
Have a good one.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie, car mes jours. Ça commence.